pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Hour number three begins right now. 251-343-0106. Want to be in touch with me, all you got to do is text me, and I'll do my best to get to your text. I got a bunch to get to here. We'll get to those in just a moment. Still to come, Chris Elliott, our returning champion. Also, he is state senator for this half of Baldwin County. So looking forward to that discussion, so please stay tuned for that. Butter and I, the big beautiful bill, gave me a $10,000 tax break on overtime. It sped up Social Security going broke and gave others a tax break. He closed the borders. Good job, since that seems like he's already a lame duck president. Don't underestimate him. He's winning a lot of court cases, Butter Knife. I would say that's going in Trump's favor right now. And the reason why this isn't getting as much attention, because the media tend to do this, you know, well, A, Fox News is very reactionary to whatever the left of center media is. But, you know, Trump wins a court case here on the ballroom. The Postal Service, it's outrage city for about 2-3 hours, and then they move on to the next outrage. I think these things are going to add up, and it's not going to just change things for the Trump administration. We are like in this kind of time when this is kind of flying under the radar, but the court is looking at the balance of power and government. No, the executive branch can do this. No, the executive branch is able to do this. And all of these powers that are going, all these court cases are going in Trump's favor. When the next Democrat is elected, they're going to have those powers as well. It's almost, you know, it's kind of a remaking, a resetting of your three branches of government. Also, given particularly that the legislative branch isn't performing because of the gridlock in the country, or the kind of partisan division of America that's very even right now. Pat says it's not mirror image prison. The first has a combination for mentally ill, even as a mental hospital built in. That's where the difference in price is. And that's fine, but do you think it's going to be the matter of $200 million versus $1.2 billion? Are we spending $1 billion on mental facilities? There are some mirror images aspects of it. At least that's the way the way it was presented to the legislature when they first passed this. Troy fan writes, hi, Jeff, regarding prison cost. Be it here, be it there, soon enough you'll start talking about some real money. Ultra Runner. Hey, he is in the ballpark. Populism is fun when you are popular, but just ask the ranchers how it feels when you're not. Populism is fun to date, but we shouldn't try to marry her. We should rediscover a guiding philosophy to inform our decisions. I love Trump, but I can't wait for conservative philosophy to reemerge. How about you? I tell you my theory on this, Ultra Runner, is we in Conservative Incorporated, and I was a part of it. The think tanks, the, you know, Laffer Curve types, the era of trying to resurrect the Reaganism in the American Republican Party. There was a lot of lip service paid to that over the years, just and all the ideologies, the rising tide lifts all boats, starving the beast. How many times have we heard that? To lower government spending. It just turns out you can't really starve the beast because it just finds another trough to feed out of. Republicans went along with that for decades. And I think the Tea Party populism, when they started talking about bailouts, when we started enacting bailouts, they were totally antithetical to the American free market economy viewpoint. When bad behavior, bad actors leveraged so much of the American economy that if they did not react in a certain way, the government did not come in and bail out, then it would have crashed the whole system. There was an imbalance there. And it flew under the radar for years, and then we didn't know about it. It was kind of done out of sight, out of mind. It was very complicated. But in that whole time period, it was all about hands off, less government. Let the free market decide. Well, the free market turns out some short-term actors aren't responsible. And you had this sort of Keynesian approach come into the political culture, the TARP bailout, Obama's big stimulus, and the do-gooders in government policy who saw the emerging threat of climate change or whatever, trying to engineer through government spending a way out of that. It turned out to be nothing but a boondoggle. That it's just conservative philosophy is fine when you practice it in a vacuum. It's the same thing the left does, Ultra Runner. We could talk about it and the merits of it. But I think it's the same. It has the same flaws as socialism. And it operates on this assumption everybody's going to get on the same page and operate in their best interest. They're going to work hard. They have the same work ethic as you do. They don't. The humanity is full of variables. So you gotta concoct a system that addresses that. And that's been the struggle with conservative ideology. Just some people just aren't going to go to work. Some people are going to look for ways to cheat the system or co-opt the system. Maybe not cheat, but do it within the letter of the law for self-benefit. That it's not just, okay, we're going to produce widgets and there's going to be demand for them and we're going to employ people and then that's going to create more demand and other widget for other widgets. And it's, you know, that maybe that's the framework, but it's not how it always works. So I think this populist approach is sort of a product of the abuses over decades. And just a lack of understanding, perhaps, of deficit spending and what that actually does. You know, inflation to a lot of people, Ultra Runner, it's not, well, there's more money in the system, so it's devalued the currency, so things go up. I mean, that's logical. But there's an emotional reaction, and Democrats try to, and I believe people believe it, that it's just greedy corporations, amoral corporations, just raising prices, bilking us for more money. Taking advantage of us in our time of need or whatever. And that, you know, some of that is actually going on. So it's probably when it comes down to it, when we talk about government and just the role of government in your daily life, government does too much. There's too much the government does, or it's something bigger than that. It's this philosophy that government can fix everything, and we look to government for solutions when we don't need to be looking to government. We need to look individually at ourselves and our faith. We don't need to put politicians on this pedestal. But populism is born out of this idea, at least when it comes to politics, out of this idea that government can and should do more and take a more proactive role in our daily lives to make our quality of life better. And that's a philosophy. But the conservative philosophy just doesn't really jibe with that. Mike, Jeff, don't y'all know y'all are supposed to ignore Republican failures because if you point it out, you're helping Democrat socialists win or something like that. According to the Fox News crowd, gaslighting is the answer to all the nation's problems. The Fox News crowd, they're looking at short-term political results. And they do things, like right now, they're talking about a piece in the Athletic. Says women are leading the pushback against male sports. It's calling them hypocritical. It's like they take the outrage of the day and put such a keen focus on it with the hope or the anticipation that look at these guys. They want boys playing in girls' sports. You can't trust these guys. So if they're wrong on this, and this one's pretty easy for you to figure out, they're wrong on everything else. And that only kind of gets, it's a very shallow understanding. I mean, there's some truth to it. But it's Sean Hannity goes on air tonight and he skips the Lindsey Clancy verdict or whatever's coming. And he starts talking about, well, we need to figure out a way to the penny plan or reducing government spending. And, you know, people are just not interested. It's not flashy. And that's where, you know, but Trump, he comes out throwing hand grenades. He's compelling. He's speaking for people. It's that's sort of the information loop we're in right now. Leo, referencing prisons. Why are we supposed to treat prisoners better? We treat military members. All we had were tents in Afghanistan. And it's a fair question, but as I said, an Eighth Amendment problem in a federal judge who interprets the Eighth Amendment saying this is cruel and unusual, and it forces the hand of states. No debate, no vote. Coach, is KIV proactive about anything? Depends on what it is. On the debate, is that really, who is out there that the debate is a make or break thing for any candidacy? Because you know what? The candidate that's usually whining about a debate is the losing candidate. If Doug Jones really wants a debate, if you Doug Jones supporters really want Tuberville to debate him, you gotta rally your candidate. You gotta force Coach to debate. It's a voluntary thing. My name Texter, saw a billboard of Coastal Mississippi this week. Free advertising, free medical marijuana cards. What does that tell you about the person about the rush to get as much marijuana sold as fast as possible, as much as it can be done? That they're going to make a lot of money off of it? He also, I am not so sure about Tommy Tuberville's priority is big business interest. He supports mud dumping in Mobile Bay because it's the best interest in the Port of Mobile, which drives commerce throughout the state. We sure bend over backwards for the Port of Mobile. One more here before we go to break. Squirrel Vereen. When are people going to learn to stop taking stuff for granted like Surefire Tuberville win? Well, people think that they don't get involved. The next generation sees the loser. Jones / Democrats are popular enough for the winners not to have a mandate, so they will forever think their ways are mainstream acceptable and they have a chance. I don't know about the Doug Jones thing, but we can talk about that on the other side. Stick around. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Was gonna keep you free and clean.
Counting flowers on the wall, that don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with the deck of 51. Smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing to do. It's good to see
welcome
you.
Welcome back to the Jump Force Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. Coming up on Monday's show, Shane Stringer tentatively scheduled. It's his turn in rotation. I'll have to make sure I verify that prior to Monday's show, but I expect him to be here. Del Jackson from WVNN Yellowhammer News, and then a guest to be named later. So that's coming up on a Monday's program. Still come on this program, State Senator Chris Elliott, as we close out the week. See, Butter Knife. Republicans, Democrats are polarized today until the far right and far left simply get out of the way. They're going to get nothing accomplished. This may sound crazy, but we need a few more old political savvy work with the other types in government today. But that's sort of what the system rejects. Like, and Butter Knife, here's the problem. The far right and the far left are where the enthusiasm, the voter enthusiasm lies. Those are the people who vote. Those are the people who care enough to vote. And because of that phenomenon, that's what you hear in campaigns and elections. Now, some mean it. I'm not, you know, but some just don't mean it at all. And you have this contradiction where, hey, you ran on this. What are you doing? But they're cutting back, you know, deals behind the scenes to govern America. And, hey, this is not what I voted for. Killer Bees, you don't need a marijuana card. Just ride through Pritchard after September 4th. I wouldn't recommend that. Jason, just an observation. Scroll over an Ultra Runner have really separated from the pack and dropped some quality and thought-provoking ideas throughout the day. Now, typically, Jason, I would say reserve your praise for the show host, but no, I agree. I agree with that. Back to Squirrelverine, who, and I was reading his text right before we went to the break. I'm not there where Senator Brubaker is. I'm taking the Tuberville win for granted. In my ideal world, they, you know, there would be some truth to that, and Tuberville would need to do more to shore up the vote to win. There's just no outcome where I see that happening. Let me explain why 17 is different. Well, Doug Jones did it with Roy Moore. Yeah, but that was an off-cycle election in the middle of December, right during the holiday season. Low turnout overall, but high Democrat turnout. And nothing else on the ballot except in some places, in particular Montgomery, where they put a state Senate race on the ballot to drive out Democrat turnout because you didn't really have Republican opposition. You can't recreate 2017 on a general election ballot, on a November 3rd style ballot with other offices, down ballot races. Lieutenant Governor, AG, Secretary of State, State Auditor, Ag Commissioner. You have all these offices down ballot that people are going to show up to vote for as well, and just straight ticket voting. They had the straight ticket option on the 17 ballot, but people showing up were looking at either Roy Moore or Doug Jones, and Roy Moore was toxic. Tuberville hasn't been accused of the things that Roy Moore has been accused of. And as much of a lightning rod as Tuberville could be, he was nowhere near what Roy Moore was with the Ten Commandments and that legacy. And having been removed from office from the bench twice, that just did not exist. And that's not going to exist on a November 3rd ballot. If Tuberville's in trouble, then there are a lot bigger systemic problems for Republicans. At the top of the ticket is going to lose a Democrat. I don't see it. I don't see a path. I just don't. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Always will. And on the old town square, under the barbershop pole, they set me up in the
chair.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for being with us on this, what's left of this Friday morning. Text line, we still got a few, some of you responding to the compliments on the text line to each other. Kind of a new phenomenon on the FM Talk 106.5 text line. But we'll review those and take those under advisement as they come in. Joining us now, our returning champion. He is my state senator, represents the lower half of Baldwin County, or the southern portion, State Senator Chris Elliott. Senator, good morning. How are you?
It's on a text line. I don't think I've ever done that. So we may derail that from happening further today. Sorry.
That's all right. We can pick it up on Monday. Hey, well, kind of out of nowhere, $195 million, you know, another day, another multi-million dollar borrowing capacity extended. What should we make of it?
Well, two things. One, I'm pretty frustrated in reading that. And I'm frustrating in reading that because the bill sponsor that authorized that capacity absolutely before the committee meeting said, we're not going to use this. The finance director said to me in no uncertain terms, we're not going to use this. The administration said, we're not going to use this. You know, we need it just in case it's an emergency, but we're not using this. This is not a bill that we're in support of, and we're not going to use it. And what are we doing? We're using it. Here we go again. And the frustrating thing for me on it, Jeff, is not whether or not we need to build these prisons, which we absolutely do. The frustrating part for me is that you have an administration on the way out, and frankly, you know, some members that are on the way out who are encumbering the state and its revenue for 20 years from now, and they're not going to be here for it. They're not going to be responsible for it. They are adding even more debt to the state when they are quite just, you know, in there for a very short time. And that should concern everyone.
Well, and I, Senator, it looks to me, I mean, you've already blown through, well, you haven't. The state's already blown through $1.2 billion for one. $200 million, and you know, I guess there's a few more additions, and they keep saying the change in scope to the Elmore County facility, and some of that won't be necessary down our way in Elmore County. However, $195 million is not going to build that prison, is it?
Yeah, that's, you know, again, I'm not questioning the need to build more prisons. That has to happen. That is supposed to happen. It needs to happen. My issue is our oversight authority, and making darn sure, that this money is not spent in the way that it was last time. Right. And so what did we see? We saw a broken delivery method, and how the prisons were constructed and managed in Elmore County. We saw ballooning costs that outstripped the budget for two prisons with just one. And so the guarantees that as an appropriator, I would want to see was that not that, hey, are we spending money on another prison, which we absolutely need to do. It is what guardrails have we put in place to ensure that we do not screw it up like we did last time.
But the question here is, this isn't going to be nearly enough, I would think.
It should be. If you've really got another $600 million, and Senator Albritton, I think, mentioned this, if you've got that money sitting around in cash and you're adding 200 to it, 800 million, yeah. If we do a prison right as opposed to what we have done, this absolutely should cover it. Now, the question is whether or not the guardrails exist under this current scheme to differ from the delivery method we've used before. And they very well may. And if they do, that's great. I get very concerned with this administration learning from the mistakes of the past. I mean, let's be honest. They screwed up the delivery method on the Elmore County prison badly. Now, have we learned from that or not? Sitting here today, I don't know the answer to that. I hope so, but hope is not a way to appropriate.
I hate to think this way, but is it possible they just kind of knew all along? Well, you know, there's a very low percentage chance this delivery method's going to work out as we anticipate, but it's good enough for now. It'll win favor from the legislature. We have this perception that we have a gun to our head from the U.S. attorney's offices in Alabama, and they're going to do something radical, and we can use that to solidify the support and win over the legislature. And all the same time, knowing this was not going to actually, this had a very low percentage chance of actually coming the way they were presenting it.
There is an argument to be made that expediency was, you know, was certainly a factor, and that it was warranted. There's even an argument to be made that some margin of increased cost was warranted for expediency's sake. There is no way to make the argument that almost double the original budgeted number and price tag is worth the expediency that in the end, we didn't even get that. And so what we ended up with was a delivery method that was supposed to be more expedient and wasn't, and we paid a huge premium for that delivery method and that expedience, and it didn't even materialize. And so it has, if there's any silver lining, it is that I hope, and again, hope is not a way to appropriate, but I hope that we have learned from that. And I just, I'm not comfortable that we have. I've not been assured that we have. And so I'm concerned. And again, I'm concerned that we are borrowing again 20-year money at the end of an administration, and the governor is still the governor, and the elected officials and the appointed officials on the prison finance authority are still elected and appointed. But gosh, I hate that folks that aren't going to be here being responsible for debt service for 20 years.
Well, and so we already kind of addressed the question: is this going to be enough? Let's say, you know, what could have been done different? That you're right. They failed the test on learning the mistakes of the past, or maybe they haven't failed it yet, but that they didn't do it right. And then you have a new governor, and this governor is going to inherit this situation. That kind of makes me, you know, I mean, that kind of makes me wonder, like, what's being done now? All these important decisions being done on the way out are not just going to have to be gone back and corrected.
Well, and again, they may be doing it right. They may have these protections in place. It's probably a good idea to communicate that as opposed to say, just trust us. Because the last time I heard just trust us, I got, we're not going to use this money. We don't need this bonding capacity. There's no reason to pass this. And yet here we are doing just that. And so trust is not something that's very valuable right now, because it doesn't, I don't trust them, because they told me they weren't going to do exactly what they just did. And the reason again is not that I don't think it needs to happen and the money doesn't need to be spent. It does. I'm concerned about whether or not the safeguards are there to ensure that we have learned from our past mistakes. And I'm not convinced that we have.
Is this something you're hearing from, you know, any of your other colleagues? Because, you know, that, like I said, this shows up out of nowhere, or at least, you know, those of us who are kind of on the outside looking in, they do it. And in the lead up, Senator, we're trying to ascertain whether or not, like, what the dollar amount they're going to be asking. They would not tell us. And I immediately got suspicious. Well, they don't want a bunch of malcontents, you know, stopping this plan with any kind of a support that may have a chance to rally. But, you know, if I'm in the Alabama legislature, did you see this coming? You know, or furthermore, what's been the reaction you've been hearing from maybe some of your colleagues?
Well, again, it was a little bit of surprise because I remember specifically being on the phone with the administration, being, you know, there with the bill sponsor saying, hey, you're asking for, I think at the time it was $450 million worth of bonding capacity here. Whoa. What gives? We need to take a breath here and make sure that we've got some guardrails that are going to make, you know, ensure we're not going down the same path again. I got an answer. We're not doing that. We're not going down that path. We're not going to even use this capacity. This is not something the administration wants. And then what do we got? We've got the administration using that bonding capacity that they said in no uncertain terms they were not going to use, that they were just going to have in place, for the next administration when it was time. And that's just, it's just disappointing. And if I'm the next administration, I have to be increasingly frustrated with big decisions being made that are going to encumber the state for decades to come, and are really going to kneecap the next administration and the next legislature and then the next quadrennium, because we've used up all this borrowing capacity for a project that may or may not have the guardrails on it that we need, and an administration that's going to be gone and unaccountable.
Well, it's just the credit card's going to be maxed out on day one of the new administration.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Bingo. You're going to inherit a budget that is strapped and an economy that is slowing down, and a credit card that's maxed out.
Well, and, you know, is there an accountability mechanism here even 6 months down the road from now if the new governor gets in and is like, whoa, 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 what were we doing here? And Tuberville's like suggested as much. He wants, you know, an audit. He wants to look at this, and we're going to find out that for, you know, the last 10 years, wow, look what's been going on under Governor Bentley and Governor Ivey. What do you do there? You know, it's like, I guess first and foremost, you got to look at ways to reform. But my suspicion is there's going to be at least some of that the new administration is going to uncover.
Well, and so that's my hope, right? It's one thing to have the borrowing authority. It's another thing to issue the bonds. My concern is, you know, we got three months left here, right? Three and a half months before the new governor, you know, takes office. What do you do to obligate that funding in the next 3.5 months? It's one thing to say, okay, it's here to use for prisons, which I think, again, we agree with. And nobody is really arguing that. It is, you know, what mechanisms are in place to make sure that we learn from our delivery method problems? It is, how are we going to ensure that this is done correctly and in a more fiscally responsible way? What I don't want to see is a bunch of this being put under contract between now and the next administration taking place. Get the financing in order, fine. If that's what you're doing, fine. But I want to make sure that the delivery method is updated to account for sins of the past.
What's to stop them from not taking that into account? Is there in 3 months long enough for this administration to get the toothpaste out of the tube to where y'all can't put it back in the future in a new quadrennium? I mean, is that what's underway here?
I don't know the answer to that. The story started breaking yesterday. And Jeff, I certainly would hope so. But remember, this is the same governor who pulled out all the stops to make sure that the West Alabama corridor was so far down the road and that the bonding was tied up so tight that there was no way to outdo it as we borrow again against the state's credit card to make a priority of hers take place, even though it was going to cost way more than they budgeted, way more than what was appropriated, way more than what was borrowed. Let's just get it, you know, under contract and tied up so that they have to do it in the future long after I'm gone. And I sure hope I sure hope that that's not something that's going to happen right now. And so your question is, what can we do about it? What can the legislature do about it between now and February? And the answer is nothing. That's one of the problems with the interaction between the governor and the legislature is that our power exists only when we are in session. And that doesn't start until February after the new governor is sworn in.
But the legislature enabled this. They and, you know, I wouldn't have seen it coming either. But I guess the lesson here is don't leave the ability, at least, on the table and just anticipate the good faith of an administration to do the right thing. You got to, like, kind of tie up these loose ends and not just have a governor who could go to bond on a West Alabama corridor, A, or a prison, B. You're going to have to now, and this is, you know, to the detriment of future governors, but this is what we've learned, it seems like, that the legislature's got to learn a lesson here as well.
I think so. And this is coming from, you know, from a legislator. But I hope that my colleagues are paying attention to this. And look, it might be one of those things. We just want somebody else to solve the problem. The legislature doesn't want to have to deal with it. Let the governor solve the problem. And that may be the approach that my colleagues are taking. That's not the approach I take. That's not the approach I take when I look at issues like this and say, whoa, pump the brakes. What are the guardrails? How do we keep from doing this before? Because we have seen a governor that is hellbent on doing what she wants to do, even if it is wasteful of taxpayer funds. We've seen that. And I'm sorry it stings, I'm sure, to hear that or for me to say that. But the West Alabama corridor is a great example of in my mind, wasteful spending for the sake of expediency. And that's not talking about the merits of the project. That's just talking about the delivery method. And we've seen that with prisons, right?
Senator, we got to wrap it up and we're a little long here, but I'm not even convinced at this point that the governor is calling the shots here. I mean, I feel like we got a Joe Biden situation. She hasn't done a press conference in 5 years. She doesn't do media. She doesn't talk to members of the legislature unless you're in leadership, I suppose. But this is, you know, like, who is running this ship?
Jeff, I am really looking forward to Coach Tuberville being our
governor. All right. Well, I'll take your non-answer there as an answer. But, hey, we got to get out of here. We always appreciate it. And we'll do it again next week.
Have a great weekend. Thanks for having me on.
State Senator Chris Elliott there. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Song of the South. Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth. Gone with the wind.